The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What's up, fellow addicts? This is Shannon, the producer of The SDR Show. On today's episode, joining Ralph Sutton and guest co-host James Mattern, it is the lead singer of the iconic rock band Air Supply, Russell Hitchcock. He has some great stories that he tells over the years, including some that involve Axl Rose, Robert Plant, and plenty more. And stick through all the way to the end for some more surprising stories. Before we get into the show, remember we do the show live every single Wednesday and Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern at gasdigitalnetwork.com/live. That's absolutely free, but the best way to support the show is to go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, use promo code SDR, that'll give you a 1 week free trial, which gives you access to every single episode of the SDR show that we've ever done, as well as every episode of all the other shows on the Gas Digital Network. You get the episodes sooner, the high def stream, all that good stuff, all for free for 1 week. So try that out. And here it is right now, the Russell Hitchcock of Air Supply episode of the SDR show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is the hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone walk the hole. It's beat, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's art. You need to know.
It is the SDR show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again it is James Mattern, drinking out of some weird mug with a missing child on it. What's the story with that
it's
mug?
It's Neil Young, baby. Oh, it's okay. One of the greatest of all time.
I didn't see the whole mug. It looked like it was maybe a picture
of
you.
Look at good head of hair on a young Neil Young.
Look how adorable he looked. Okay.
Look at this. This everybody knows where this is nowhere time period for him. It's great.
Fair enough. I got to give this guy a proper introduction. I mean, the soundtrack to basically everyone's fucking life. They have a relatively new song out called Be Tough, 17 studio albums, 13 compilation albums, 4 live albums, 27 singles, still doing 130 shows a year, tens of millions of albums sold. They're currently on tour with the Lost in Love Tour, the Lost in Love Experience album as well, originally from Melbourne, Australia, ranked as one of the best top 5 greatest Australian bands of all time. We are talking with Russell from Air Supply. How are you, sir?
Great, Ralph. How are you doing,
Jamie? So happy to have you, man. So happy. I want to start. I'm not even going to let you talk yet because I have to tell you these things, Russell. We'll start with this. My first concert ever, Air Supply. Okay?
Really?
No, and I'm going to tell you a very weird, funny story. I just got to get this out at the top because I've had this in my head for years and never thought I'd actually get a chance to talk to you directly, right? So when I was 14, my mom worked for the senator, I was friends with the senator of Brooklyn, and they would put on these free concerts in Brooklyn, and they needed young kids that they could trust to go around collect money. So it was me and my brother, because my mom knew the senator. They knew we were honest Jewish boys. We're not going to steal. And the first concert in the series was Air Supply. So that was my first concert ever at 13 or 14 years old, right? Always was a fan at that point, but a couple of things weird happened at that point. One, my mom was dating a comic. They went backstage to see you guys, and he was the hackiest comic in the world. He comes to the backstage, and he says to you guys, "So where's the gel and the combs?" And you looked at him like, "What?" And he goes, "Oh, is this not Hair Supply?" And nobody laughed.
No.
Yeah. And he just walked out of the room justifiably. It was a stupid joke. But then my mom became friends with Bernie Boyle, who was your road manager for years. And she spent some time once going from the hotel to the venue with you guys on the bus and wanted me to directly tell you that you were the nicest guy in the world. You were playing somewhere in Connecticut at the time. I'm not exactly sure, but just wanted me to say, hey, just let him know that he was the nicest guy in the world.
Well, that's very sweet of your mom.
Do you remember Bernie Boyle?
Oh, I was just going to tell you, do you have time for a great Bernie Boyle story?
Absolutely.
We play frequently in Taiwan, and we had to do some promo Graham had a hangover, so he didn't want to go. So Bernie went with me. And it's about an hour and a half drive from the hotel up in the sticks. And the radio stations are owned by the Catholic Church. Hence, they're called ICRT, you know. So we get into the studio and this guy says, Russell Hitchcock with Air Supply. And Graham Russell couldn't make it today, but we have Bernie Boyle, their tour manager, who's, you know, has a great history with acts. In fact, Bernie used to work for the Beatles in in 61 or whatever, when they're in Hamburg. And this guy says, do you have any interesting stories about working with the Beatles? And Bernie said, yeah, I do, actually. There's one comes to mind. He said, we're all sleeping in one room in Hamburg, and it was like 4 in the morning and everybody went to sleep. But before everybody else went to sleep, John Lennon started to draw something on the wall, because he was a bit of an artist, obviously. And he said, when I woke up in the morning the next day, there was this life-size portrait of Jesus on the wall. So, of course, the Catholic guy goes, and Bernie, because you couldn't stop him, he said, yes. And John drew Jesus with his robes open. And let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen, Jesus was very well endowed.
Jesus was packing?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Did they get kicked out or anything? Or
No, this guy just kind of tried to gloss over it and got on with the interview. But Bernie was famous for speaking his mind, and he didn't give a shit who it was, really, you know.
That's great. Yeah, my mom said he was also one of the nicest guys in the world, too. Yeah, she became like lifelong friends with him for a very long time. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's excellent.
What were you going to say, James? You look like you're excited about Jesus's penis. Is that why?
Look, this is early in the interview. I don't want to put any pressure, but how are we going to top Jesus was packing? I mean,
well,
I could
top
what
it.
A
you're
bombshell
ready?
Right from the jump. Bernie,
I'm going to give you a great segue. Basically, the reason why Air Supply exists is because of Jesus. Is that right?
That's packing Jesus.
True. Absolutely true. That was our very beginning. Jesus Christ Superstar
is where you guys met. So whether you believe in religion or not, you can't knock the fact that Jesus brought you guys together.
Absolutely. And being a confirmed atheist, I thought I was going to get struck down when I went to rehearsals the first day, but we managed to get through it.
That's funny. So like he obviously, I mean, so many fucking questions, but by the way, one last side story. When I was my first apartment in New York City, we're like 22, my brother and I, blasting music all the time. And my next door neighbor sees me in the elevator one day. He goes, hey, dude, you know, I got to tell you, you guys are always blasting some awesome music. I said, thank you. He goes, but one question, what's up with all the Air Supply? I'm like, dude, fucking Air Supply is awesome. Like, and that's what's funny is that you guys have been together almost 50 years. For most of your career, post the time you were huge. So you guys were enormous, like always on solid gold and everywhere in the 70s and 80s. Like, you were just everywhere. Then for a long time, for whatever reason, I hate to say this, but it wasn't cool to like Air Supply. It was like you guys were disrespected, regardless of the fact, if you go see Air Supply live, it's a fucking rock show. You know, it's a great live act, great hits. But for some reason, it wasn't cool to like Air Supply. Correct me if I'm wrong. In the past 7 to 10 years, it's now cool again to like Air Supply.
This is true. I mean, obviously, we've weathered the storm of... And well, to go back a little, we were never cool. We didn't go to the parties. We didn't kiss enough ass in the right areas, but we succeeded in spite of that. And, you know, now, in fact, obviously you guys know all the, you know, Christopher Cross and Styx and blah, blah, blah. Mm. Everybody's cool again because of this yacht rock, wherever that came from.
Right.
You know, and it's been a blessing. We toured Australia, New Zealand, Southeast Asia last year before Christmas, and we've been on the road in the US since, and there hasn't been one show that hasn't been sold out. So, you know, we're doing something right, and there is an awareness about our kind of music again, which is fantastic.
Right. And go ahead, James, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I'm just, it's so crazy for you to say that you're never cool, and I look at you and I would never fight you. You have so much ink and paint on your neck. Like, you're the coolest looking dude I've ever seen. And you're, all due respect, clearly a little older than me, sir. To me, you're the coolest dude ever. And you got that wonderful paint behind you. And you're like, we were never cool. And you look like you've punched 5 bikers this morning.
I couldn't punch a biker's grandmother.
But you know who says that? Cool sons of bitches, yeah, sir. Way, also, tough dudes say that shit.
Russell said that he only spends money on jewelry and tattoos. You and I also have a real affinity to skulls. I saw some cool skull jackets in the new Be Tough video that I would kill for. I would wear those skulls, that skull jacket out. I have that same ring, the middle one I have. We have the same ring, except mine's a knockoff. Yours is probably expensive. Mine was $80 on eBay, so mine is probably not real.
Mine wasn't $80, but anyway, God bless you.
So it's funny that I saw in another interview that you remember that moment when you guys met so well that you know the date to this day. It's May 12th, 1975, when you guys met. And I was trying to think of other duos like you guys. And what I mean by that is I can't count like Rolling Stones or Zeppelin, because even though the duos are synonymous, it was a band. Right.
Yeah.
Air Supply really was you guys. The other guys would change pretty often. It was just really the two of you. So that's where it's different. Right. The only other group I could think of, and correct, maybe Loggins and Messina, they didn't have that kind of hit range, but definitely Daryl Hall and John Oates is maybe the only other one. Is that fair?
Well, I'd put America in there too.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, that is true.
And they're great friends of ours, and we've done a lot of shows with them. But apart from, you know, the ones you mentioned, I think we're pretty much I've never thought about it, but you're probably correct.
And also, what I didn't really always know is that your partner, which is funny, you both have Russell in your name, which was always confusing, you know, but he writes the songs, you sing them for the most part. He has sang some. But my question on the writing method, because now especially with I think Mumbo Jumbo's over a decade ago, like 12, 13 years ago. But now with the new song Be Tough and stuff, does he write everything and just say, hey, sing this? Or do you get the songs even back then and you're like, oh, I think this might be better here or this might be better there? Or do you just say, oh, I trust you, man. We've had enough hits. I'll go with what you say.
Well, I trust him implicitly to start with, but usually he'll say, I've written a song. I think it'd be great if you sang it. Mm-hmm. Not like we have rats in the basement. It's always been democratic. In fact, All Out of Love, I was supposed to sing the whole song, and I sang the verses, and in the studio, and I came out and I said, this doesn't sound right to me. Why don't you give it a shot? And he said, oh, it's too high for me. And I said, just give it a shot. You know, it's got nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. And so we sang it. And that was the thing, you know. He sang the verses, and I did the choruses, and you know, it turned out to be one of the biggest hits we ever had.
What's wild about that song is, A, for years you held the record for the longest note in a pop song, 16.2 seconds, which is great. But then also, I did not know that Clive Davis made you guys change the lyric to instead of "I'm so lost without you" is "I want to arrest you" or something. I'm not exactly sure. I tried for an hour to listen to the original. It is nowhere. It is scrubbed from the internet. I couldn't find it.
Well, that's Clive for you. I have a great story about the last note on All Out of Love, which, you know, I think that's a load of crap, really. But anyway, it's the record. It was. Uh-huh. We used to have three guys that worked for us as security. That went on to work for Guns N' Roses. In fact, Doug Goldstein ended up managing them. Mm-hmm. And he was in LA, and I was at home one night, and he called me. And I, you know, always said, what's up, Dougie? And he says, I've got some good news and some bad news. And I said, okay, well, I don't really care what you give me. And he said, well, Axel wants to have dinner with you. And I said, great. You know, and I said, when? And he said, that's the bad news, tonight. Okay. So we met at, are you familiar with the Rainbow in Los Angeles?
Of course. Yeah. Went there a couple of times to see Lemmy playing slots back in the day.
There you go. Well, he said, we'll meet at the Rainbow. So I went, met them, and Axel was all over me like, oh, you're so great, and your voice is so this and that, and really fawning. Mm-hmm. And he said, can I ask you a question? And I said, whatever, you know. And he said, do you mind if I, on our next record, that I hold a note longer than you did? And I said, I really don't give a shit, you know. So knock yourself out. And, you know, he's all, thank you so much, and blah, blah. So fast forward, I went to the Wembley a memorial concert for Freddie Mercury in 92. And I was backstage and I was Doug Goldstein's guest, actually. And I saw Axel in the car park. And I just went over and I said, "Hey, Axel, what's up?" And he looks at me and he goes, "Do I know you?"
"No."
"What?"
And I said, "Well, we met at the Rainbow. We had dinner. I sing with Essequa." And he goes, "No, I don't recall." And
I used
a nasty word and walked away. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Okay. So that first half of the story, I was blown away because it does not seem to go with character of Axl Rose, who started riots in St. Louis and has offended everyone in every song ever. I'm like, whoa, Axl. Yeah. And then the second part is like, well, yep, that's Axl. Holy shit.
Well, I mean, I was amazed. I met or saw in the presence of, you know, David Bowie, Annie Lennox, George Michael, you know, everybody. And all the dressing rooms were backstage. They were all pipe and drape, just with somebody, you know, your name stuck on the outside or pinned to. Axl was the only guy that had his own dressing room. And he had two bodyguards at one each side of the doors.
That's so on brand. It is so on brand.
Well, and it gets worse. And everybody was watching the previous acts, of course. And the commentator came on and he said, "Well, it's really exciting to be here, you know, this Freddie Mercury memorial." And he said, "Apart from a lackluster set from Guns N' Roses," and the door bursts open and Axl's outside going, "Can I use bad language?"
"Yeah.
I want that motherfucker in here now. You know, nobody's going to say that about my band." And everybody was going, "Why don't you just sit down and shut up? You know, you're not the king of the world here, that's for sure." So I don't have really, well, obviously, too fond of memories of Axl.
That's really fucking hilarious.
You should have told him you're not Jesus who's packing.
Let me ask you this question. From that first meeting to the second time, was that between the first album exploding or was the album already big when that first meeting and he actually was nice?
Their album was very big. Appetite for Destruction, very big.
And after that second meeting at the Queen thing, did you ever see him again?
No.
Oh, okay. Too bad.
I wouldn't choose to.
Yeah, so. I love the story when you met Robert Plant, that he actually came up to you because he was a fan of yours. That's awesome.
Yeah, we were playing an award show in Bombay, that was called then, with Robert Plant, Brian May, Roger Taylor, Brian Adams, the people that did the Macarena thing, and a bunch of others. And it was, because it was an award show, we were given the VH1 India Award for being the most fab band in the history of music. I never quite understood anyway. And in any case, I went backstage. It was in a football stadium. That was how big a deal it was. And once again, the dressing rooms were just curtains. Mm-hmm. I was walking to where we were, and I saw Robert Plant surrounded by reporters. And I was going to go, "What do you say? I like your work," or "Nice hair," or something. Anyway, I was going to walk past him, and he stopped the press thing and said, "My name's Robert Plant. Very pleased to meet you."
That's so cool.
I thought that was super cool.
And that's one thing I've noticed over the years is that, you know, really talented musicians that just appreciate music for music all love fucking Air Supply because it's just great songs. No matter what you want to say, if you don't feel they're heavy enough or whatever, first of all, then go see the band live. You change your mind. But they're just great fucking songs. End of story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm good friends with Rudy Sarzo, you know, played with Black Sabbath and New Name. And when I first met him, actually it was at the Rainbow, and he came over and he said, "You know, I'm Rudy." And I said, "I know who you are." And he sat down and had a drink and he said, "I'm a really big fan of your music." And I said, "Oh, that's cool." And he said, "Don't tell anybody."
Didn't you have the same manager as Ozzy for a while? That guy, what is his name? Don Arden? Wasn't he saying?
Yeah. He was. I got a million stories about him that are fantastic. But anyway, Rudy's a big fan. And Rob Halford called when we were in LA in the 80s and asked if I could sing backgrounds on one of their albums. And I didn't get a chance to. but I think he liked me as well. You get my
and
drift.
Also, by the way, which kudos to you guys in the press that was sent over was videos of you guys live from, I'm guessing it was in the last year or two, because you had a mask on, so it had to be post-COVID times. You could still sing your fucking ass off. It's wild how strong your voice still is.
Well, thank you. It's just, yeah, thank you.
All right, so I got to get a couple of the questions out there. So number one, this may sound stupid. I say this a lot, so I apologize to the listeners. James is a comic. I do research. That's the difference between two of us. And I just try to figure out what it is about a band. James could just be fun. So I could not find the answer to this. Where does the name come from? Is it Air Supply, as in all these songs are about love and there's that connotation of love being air kind of thing? Or am I totally off from it?
Much more simple. We'd recorded some demos in Australia that we wanted to take to all the record companies, and we didn't have a name for the band. And we were very frustrated at this particular point. So after rehearsals or whatever it was, the show, Graham and I went our separate ways. And the next day he came into the show and he said, I had a dream last night. And there was a huge billboard and it was white and it had flashing lights all around it. And in the middle, it just said Air Supply. And I said, okay, that's good enough for me.
And how long into the career did you guys coin the term Airheads for your fans? Was that after the candy came out, or?
Were they at the, right? That's
was
funny.
It after the candy came out?
In fact, yeah, candy came out of the closet. It was actually a fan that said that first, that she called herself an Airhead, and it stuck with us. And they're actually a very proud throng of people now. They, in fact, Graham typically says during the show, if there's any new people here tonight, by the time you leave, you'll be an Airhead for the rest of your life.
That's cool.
And now we're seeing our fourth generation of fans coming, so it's awesome.
That is wild. That is fucking wild. It's by the way, it needs to be said, you guys are almost 50 years together.
Yeah.
And I could be wrong about this. You did take a break. I know you put out a couple of solo records. One of your songs was on the Arachnophobia soundtrack back in the day. I remember that. But
Yep. You
never had like a fight. You never broke up. You just took a little bit of a break. But the idea of the two of you being Air Supply has been consistent since the formation back in the mid-70s, correct?
Yes. And that period that we had not in the public eye was we've still recorded and did some other stuff. We never stopped working together. And, you know as well as I do, if somebody writes something in a magazine, then everybody takes that and runs with it. You know, they don't check to see if that was the case. But we never stopped working together since 75. And because I'm good friends with Jerry Beckley and Dewey from America, apart from those guys, I know of no other guys in music that have the same relationship that Graham and I have.
That's awesome. It's funny. I think back, it's 1975, and he starts sending you songs, and each song has the word love in it, and it's beautiful, tender songs. And you at one point say, hey, dude, are you trying to tell me something?
I never said that. That was the going rumor, too.
I saw that a lot, which, I mean, I know both of you. I know you were married a few times. I know he was also. And my mom even told me back when I told her you were coming on. He's like, yeah, I don't think he was hitting on me, but I felt he might have. I don't know. So I never thought you guys were gay at all. Not that it matters, but that's just funny. I just think if I kept getting songs from my best friend that had the word love in it, I'd be like, hey, what's going on here? I don't know what's going on here.
My wife and I, particularly my wife, we have a stalker fan, and she's jealous of my wife incredibly. And she posted on her site once that we were married, Graham and I, officially. But, we did say too during the shows that we don't sing to each other. We sing with each other.
Oh, yeah,
it's a big difference, you know.
That would be a very different Air Supply set if you guys were by candlelight staring at each other's eyes.
Yeah.
I mean, has that ever been done before? Has there ever been like a duo that sings and you find out they're singing each other and just make out at the end of the song?
Husband and wife. I was like, Sonny and Cher used to do that. Sure.
But have a gay couple that I want to, I want to change into management. I want that. Yeah. I want to manage this band.
Let me ask you, go ahead.
You guys seen that Will Ferrell, Chris Kattan thing on SNL?
Which one?
The way they made fun of us.
No.
Of Air Supply? No.
Well, it was just a parody on, and it's, I mean, you got to watch it. Maybe you can stick it up somewhere. It's really, really funny.
Oh, I will look for that.
At the end of that segment, they wrap their arms around each other and French kiss each other. You
know? Also, by the way, what I love about you guys in watching a bunch of interviews, it doesn't seem like any of that shit bothers you guys at all. You just enjoy, you know, you want to do a cover of our song. Some guy, I think recently, like a Filipino guy or something, is doing a new cover or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And you just, you're thrilled that anybody's, you know, that you just embrace it all, it seems. Nothing, it doesn't seem like it bothers you guys much.
Well, you know, if somebody covers a song and it's successful, it's good for everybody, including us.
Right.
We wanted to cover a Beatles song some years ago, and their people got back to us and said it was going to cost $30,000 to cover their song.
Wow. And so
we said, we'll pass, thanks, you know.
You just out of curiosity, because it is, you know, an interesting part for me. At one point, you were managed by the same people as same guy that managed Sabbath and Ozzy, Don Arden, famous guy. You said you have a million stories about Don. Does one jump out at you?
We used to live at Don's. He had a huge house in Beverly Hills with a couple of guest houses in the front. So Graham and I used to live there for probably about 18 months. And so I used to see Don all the time. And his office building was in the same compound. And we signed with a new lawyer. His name is Lee Phillips, and he was Barbara Streisand's lawyer and not that top, you know, level celebrities. And when we'd signed with him, and he said, "Who's your manager?" And I said, "Don Arden." And his face went white. And he said, "You know, he's a gangster." I go, "Well, he hasn't been a gangster to me, so that's all I care about." And he said, no, you're jumping from the frying pan into the fire." So anyway, he was really in shock about it. So after that meeting, I went up to Don's office, and he was on the phone. And he used to always, you know, put his hand over the phone and go, "Come here." So anyway, finished his call, and he said, "What's up?" And I said, "You'll never guess who our new lawyer is." And he said, "Who?" And he used to talk like that. He said, "Oh, come on, who was he? Who is he?" And he said, I said, "Lee Phillips." And he just burst out laughing. He said, "What did he say? What did he say? What did he say?" And I said, "Well, as a matter of fact, he said once that you went to his office and you held a gun to his head." And Don says, "Well, it wasn't loaded."
That's great. I also saw you guys toured with so many people. I think you toured with you mentioned him earlier. Was it Bowie that you? No, Rod Stewart. You guys toured with, and a bunch of other people throughout the years. Is there a tour that sticks out as like, "Oh, that was like one of my favorite moments with the band"?
Well, I mean, the Rod Stewart tour, and I shouldn't say obviously, but obviously, we'd been a band only for 3 months when we got that gig to tour North America with him, and before I got into Superstar and met Graham, I worked in an office, so I had no clue about a career in music, and I just didn't think about it because it was something that seemed like unattainable.
Right.
So to be on the road with that guy, who was the biggest star in the world in 1977, I would say, and we watched him every night, and consummate performer. You know, we learned about staging, light, sound, production, relating to the audience. That was an education that was invaluable. We've not toured with anybody else that I've been like super impressed. I mean, I love the guys in America. We get along great. We did some
show with Peter Frampton too at one point.
No.
Oh, I thought you did at least a show with him, but I saw that listed somewhere. Maybe it was one show, wasn't a tour.
We may have. Yeah, we've played multiple Bill shows. Yeah. Done him with, you know, REO and etc. So, but the Rod Stewart thing really stands out to me.
Yeah, how could it not? Also, now since 76, roughly every 3 years or so, a new Air Supply record would come out. 17 studio albums right now, but the last one was 13 years ago now. There's a new single that came out about a year and change ago called Be Tough. Yeah. As I said, I love every skull jacket in those videos. I would love to get one because I could wear that out. But, you know, I think it looks cooler on you than it would on me. But why? So, I mean, a decade and change for a new album. Was there, is there a reason? Is that, is your business partner slacking? What's going on?
No, no, he never slacks. He writes something every day, whether it's a verse or a melody or something. The thing is that after we released a version of The Power of Love in 85 or 86, I think, and I thought it was going to be the best single that we ever had. I thought it was going to outsell everything. And once again, Clive and Arister, in their infinite wisdom, they edited the song because they said radio won't play a song over 6 minutes. And I said, how about MacArthur Park? How about Hey Jude, etc. Anyway, it came and went, and we got surveys from radio at the time, and they were heartbreaking. I mean, I read them, and it said, this is the worst record Esther Plays have made. It's time for them to quit. It's a piece. One guy said it was a piece of shit. And of course, some years later, Celine Dion released it, pretty much note for note our arrangement, and it was a worldwide hit for her, and that really annoyed me too. And after that period, radio wouldn't touch us, and they still won't. I have good friends that worked at Coast Radio in LA, and for the last 10 years, we've taken them songs and say, what do you think of this? Well, it's awesome, but people don't want to hear that. They want to hear Lost in Love and Here I Am. And
right, right. Yeah.
In fact, we did a favor for them. We played just a little restaurant club thing called Spaghettini in Los Angeles. And they said, if you play a show for us, we'll give you airplay for this song, whatever it was. Of course, we did the show and they didn't play anything.
Oh.
So we kind of... I don't think we've been licking our wounds, but you can't fight City Hall, you know.
Right, but though, if I'm playing devil's advocate, Russell, radio doesn't fucking matter anymore. As a former radio guy myself,
yeah,
who gives a shit about radio now? Yeah. So now's the time to start releasing records where fans will find it.
Yeah, well, we plan on releasing a song every 3 months now.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome.
Amazing.
You know, get them out there because, as you said, the other route is just, it's not even worth the... you know, peeing on.
Do you know if you're in the Guinness Book of World Records for having the most hits with the word love in it? Because you should be if you're not.
Probably. I mean, Graham gets asked all the time, how come love? And he said, I don't know. It's not on purpose. It's just, you know, what comes up in the universe and I grab it and write it, you know. And he's a very romantic guy. We're both romantics, that's for sure.
And he says that most of the songs... it happened pretty quickly, right? I think I read that somewhere.
Yeah. He wrote Lost in Love, he said, in 15 minutes. And he said, if it's taking too long, it's not going to happen. So he just discards it, you know.
That's why. And also what I do like in watching some of these videos, you do little different arrangements every time you go out. You make the songs a little more unique and different on every tour. So you've said in many interviews, you love singing these songs every single night, but by making those changes on every tour, not too drastic. It's not like it's coming out like a metal version, but they're just different arrangements and whatnot. So it keeps it fresh while making everyone happy. Is that fair?
That's very true. And we've had quite an overturn. That's not a word. Turnover in musicians in the band. And
overturn is a word, but just in the wrong context. But yes.
Any guy that comes into the band, he brings his influences and his expertise. And, you know, we're very democratic about if anybody's got a good idea, let's try it. If it works, great. If it doesn't, then we won't use it. So I think that's the reason why a lot of stuff has changed very subtly, because I've been to concerts. In fact, I went to see Whitney Houston years ago. And I didn't recognize half the songs because the arrangement's so different.
Uh-huh.
And she was just showcasing her, you know, vocal dexterity, which was cool, but I didn't want to get three quarters of the way through I Will Always Love You before I recognized it, you know.
And by the way, it always makes me laugh. If you have a moment, listen to the Unplugged Layla that Eric Clapton did for MTV years ago, right?
Right.
He does like a rearrangement of it.
Uh-huh.
And most people, some people got it right away with the first guitar strings. You see a few people clap. And then he starts with the opening line. And then most people clap. And then when he sings Layla, there's one dude in the audience that finally figures out what song it is. And you hear a guy go, woo! It's like, yeah. Way late. Everyone else knew already.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, I hate that. In fact, my wife and I have been to see McCartney, Elton John. We're going to see the Eagles later in the year. And I mean, I love to just sit there and listen to these acts that I've been listening to for years do their thing. I mean, the Eagles are pretty boring to watch, but they sound, I mean, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
And you don't listen to the music. I read somewhere that you still if you look at your album collection, it's the Beatles, it's the Eagles. You're not looking at new music, but your partner does.
That's correct. I mean, I'm going to be 74 in June, and I'm an old fogey now. I listen to, as you said, the Beatles, AC/DC, Queen, Bee Gees, that era. And I find the times that I listen to music that's, you know, hip now, first of all, I don't get it. And secondly, I don't get it.
Also, aren't you and Graham like almost exactly a year apart, like a year and a week or something?
Yeah. He's June 11th, 50, and I'm June 15th, 49.
All right. So I am, and you guys are playing here in New York City the first week of June, I think it is. I'm not exactly sure. It's somewhere around there. If I'm in New York, I definitely am going to come see you guys because I can't wait to see you again. Over these years of doing so many, our producer says you're both Geminis. That means nothing to me, Shannon. Is there any, and I know you said your favorite songs to do live are All Out of Love and Lost in Love. You thought Even the Nights Are Better was going to be not going to be a hit because it sounded too much like the Arthur theme song, which when you said that, I'm like, oh yeah, it sounds exactly like the Arthur theme song. It's kind of funny. But is there a song that you've never done live, not including the new song, because that's not fair. I don't know if you better, but anything from the history of Air Supply, that you're like, why have we never fucking done this song live?
You know, I can't say there is because we go through everything and we have done so from day one to see what we think the audience will enjoy. And there's a lot of songs I'd love to play live, but we don't do them. And people request super old songs. Songs that are quite, you know, lost in the fog somewhere. But, you know, we did an interview a couple of weeks ago, and people, when they come to see, it's like me, I go to see McCartney. I don't want to hear anything from Flowers in the Dirt. I don't want to hear anything from, I want to hear, you know, Hey Jude, She Loves You, whatever, got to get you into my life. So we play for probably an hour 50, and I think of that hour 50, an hour 40 is songs that people know. Mm-hmm. So, and we've been blessed to have so many songs that were successful that we start the show, and I think we do four big hits back to back. And I want to hear that. I don't want to hear, you know, I don't think people want to hear those songs from us either, except fans that are really super, super airheads, and they don't ask for the old songs. Everybody wants to hear what we play, and I'm quite happy to do that. There's one guy online that bitches every time he comes to a show. I don't know why he keeps coming.
And he keeps coming. I like that. Yeah,
he keeps coming. He keeps spending money. That's good. But he says, you've got to play the same show all the time. And I said, I've seen the Eagles four times. They play the same songs all the time.
Right.
You know, just get over it. Don't come if you don't want to. I don't really care. And I guess he's going to come see us again, right?
Yeah, so he can complain again. But some people just want to complain. That's just how it is. I imagine you could do a set where every single song has been a charter, right? I mean, that's relatively easy for you guys to do, I would imagine. I forgot it. Like in listening to you guys this week when I knew you were going to be on, I forgot about how much I love Sweet Dreams. It's such a great song. And I just kind of forgot about that song. I don't know why, but there's, you know, probably like 10th of the hits that I go to. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a fucking great song.
Yeah, we opened the show with that, and it's a great Graham Russell composition and a great song. In fact, another story: we were up for an American Music Award in 1981, And against, which I had to say against, the same category was AC/DC, funnily enough. And we did a live stream thing. Well, it wasn't streaming then, but a live broadcast from the Sydney Harbour Bridge in Australia. And we were doing our thing, and we played Sweet Dreams, and we had, you know, earbuds in, and whoever it was, the winner for, you know, best pop duo or blah blah is, and then the feed went out, so so we didn't know that we'd won this thing, and it was such a pain in the ass because we wanted to be on national TV with people.
That's so weird. What year was that?
81.
Oh, that's really, well, I guess back then we had a lot more tech issues, but now we still have them today. That's funny though. That's great. Yeah. All right, before we go any further, you know these guys, and it's just one way to tell you exactly who we're talking about. It's $60 kilos. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then man, you've not been listening to the SDR show, because that unattainable number that no one in the world in Kratom could have possibly accomplished was only accomplished by YourKratom.com. For years, entrepreneurs, scientists, academics all tried to solve this $60 kilo problem. Nobody could figure it out. Then YourKratom.com comes along and bam, $60 kilos all day. How did they solve this problem of $60 kilos? Will anyone else ever solve the problem of $60 kilos? Who gives a shit? What you need to know is if you go to YourKratom.com right now and you do that $60 kilo, you'll get that there with high quality service, great strains of Kratom, and delivered direct to your door. YourKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. All right, let's get back into it. Do you put young guys in the band just to bring the average age down with you too? Is that what you do?
We put young, good-looking guys in the band to take the view away from us.
It seems like I looked at it. I'm like, well, every guy in the band is like young and good-looking. That's kind of cool. I like that.
But still, hey, who's going to look cooler than you right now, sir? I mean, this is insane. You're a little older than me, and look at you. I just turned 45, baby. What are you going to do? But he's a little bit.
But I got older than you.
Yeah. You got what?
Do you have two kids, right? I think you have two kids. Am I right with that, or am I wrong?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. What was the last tattoo you got, by the way? You know, you say you like to spend money on ink. What's the last tattoo you got?
I don't know. Which one was it? Squid. Oh, yeah. I got this. I don't know whether you can see it. I got this squid here.
Oh, I see that. Wow. That's just got that? Yeah. That's so big.
Yeah. Look at that. I'm just having all the stuff filled in, you know, scales and. In fact, I'm going today, 3 o'clock, have another appointment.
Does Graham have any or just you?
No. I'm the black sheep of the family.
That's funny. So he's the more straight edge guy. Where even back in the day, were you the more wild one, or was it half a dozen of one?
No, we both had our moments back in the day, certainly. But I haven't slowed down. I've stopped living that kind of life because it's not good for your health.
Yeah, well, same here.
Stopped drinking 18 months ago and feel better.
I mean, 18 months ago, that's not that long ago, but I thought you were going to say I stopped drinking in my 50s. 18 months ago, you're still in your 70s. That's pretty cool that you made it.
He's had a good run, Ralph. This man had a good run.
That's a good fucking run.
Well, you know when you should stop drinking when you fall out of a car and break 6 ribs. That was the end of it for me. Oof.
6 ribs?
Yeah.
If you break 5, you can keep going. But 6, you got to tap out. 5, you flip the coin. Like Harvey Dent.
That was what happened 18 months ago?
Yeah. Wow. Well, actually, less than that. But anyway, who's counting?
Jesus Christ. Wait. Okay, questions. A, were you driving? Hopefully not.
No.
Did the door swing open? You forgot to lock it?
No, it was one of my best friends. He has a Range Rover, and it's got one of those... when you open the door, the running board kind of slides out automatically.
Mm-hmm.
And I put my foot on the edge of it as it was sliding and just did face plant in the driveway. Oof. So,
oh, man. Jesus Christ. That's awful.
Not my first broken bones. In 1982, I fell off the stage in Minneapolis and broke my arm and a couple of ribs, you know.
I've actually never broken anything but a pinky toe, which I don't know why that's happened. Really, I live a very boring life.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't do it. And I actually, we sang the next night. I sat on a stool and got through the show. But after this, I was off for 6 weeks with these ribs, you know.
Would you say now that you are sober that even the nights are better?
There he is again. There's my boy Ralph.
That doesn't deserve an answer, man.
No, you are correct there. It definitely does not deserve an answer. So I read elsewhere, one last thing, that both of you agree that your favorite memory, which I think now it probably isn't true because this is, I guess, 30 years ago, was playing for Prince Charles and Prince Diana and finding out that Prince Diana was a fan. That, yes. That both of you agreed was one of the highlights of your career. That had to be, I don't know when she died, but at least 30 years ago. So I imagine in the last 3 or 4 decades, there's a few other highlights in the career of Air Supply.
Well, I mean, I'm a staunch royalist, as you can see.
Oh, there you go.
Look at that.
Queen Elizabeth. So getting to meet, I mean, it was a thrill to meet him, certainly, but to meet her, and she spent quite a bit of time with us in the greeting line at the end of this. We played for the Australian Bicentennial, and it had every act probably from the 50s up through 1988 at the time. And she was, first of all, there's no photos or videos that do her beauty justice, and she was just really sweet, and you could tell she was interested in everybody she spoke to, but that stuck with us forever. It still does. And I think my second one, we played in Cuba, I think 2005, to 175,000 people.
Jesus Christ.
My God.
Only us on the bill. So that was, and it was on the eve of a hurricane.
Wow.
And it rained, you know, incessantly. But people stayed, they sang. We didn't go on till like 1 o'clock in the morning. So I think those two are probably career-wise the highlights for me.
It is still amazing. And again, I no disrespect to the age, but to be in your mid-70s and do still over 100 shows a year, not a lot of guys. I mean, me at 53, I wouldn't do that. Even if you asked me to just get up on stage 130 nights out of the year, I'm not fucking doing it. I don't care how much money's involved. So what do you think? Is it just the adrenaline from the shows, or is just being on stage is who you are, or what is it?
I don't know. I mean, I love singing on stage in front of people now. I love being involved with Graham professionally. He's just awesome. We don't see each other when we're not working. He lives in Utah and I'm in California. And so when you get to see each other again, it's like, you know, oh, this is going to be great again. And it might seem cliched, but the audience is different every night, no matter what. And we see familiar faces, obviously, but just to be backstage, the band usually goes on before we do. And mm-hmm. to hear the audience go up for that, and then, you know, that gets multiplied 20 times when Graham and I walk on. That's a thrill that you can't really buy. And, you know, after the show, it takes me quite a while to, you know, relax again.
I'm sure.
That was why it was like a couple of bottles of red wine. I'd be relaxed after that.
When you say you see a couple of familiar faces, is one of them that jackass that writes the bad reviews? Is they see him every once in a while?
You know, I don't know who he is. He's probably dead, or he's probably doing reporting on the greyhound racing somewhere in East. But you know what?
How often do you swap out the new young bucks that are in the band? Do they have a what is that movie? Shit, is it a where you age out when you're too old? Logan's Run. That's what it is. Do they Logan's Run out after
you
a certain time?
Just made a Logan's Run reference in 2023. What the hell is going on?
They have like a little light up on there. Oh, it's time for Johnny. He's got to get out of the band. He's been in for a year and a half.
You know, it's usually up to them. They want more money. They get big egos. They have conflicts with other guys in the band. But we feel like we've got a pretty stable bunch of guys now. But we don't put up with jerks. I mean, if they mm-hmm. Misbehave, once again, we're very strict about, and this is going to sound like, I don't know what it's going to sound like to you guys, but we tell everybody once you join the band, as soon as you leave your house, you're on our dime. So you represent us in restaurants, at airports, wherever you go. Don't want to do that or you can't do it, then we're not interested. And we just don't tolerate any kind of rudeness from people that we work with.
So this, I'm just tell you a quick side story, just made me think about it. And it's not about me, but it's just so relevant. I used to host. I don't do it so much anymore because, as I said, I feel old. And even though I wouldn't go on stage a lot now, but back then I hosted this thing for years called Shiprocked, which is like 12 bands on a boat, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people. And I would be the host. I did it for like 10, 11 years, something like that. And I'd bring a date every once in a while. And I would tell the girl almost exactly that speech. Look, from the moment this boat leaves, you are with me, representing me. If you get drunk, if you get stupid, if you're going to fight, it's going to make me look bad. So please, you know, take care of it. The girl's like, I got it. Don't worry. Sometimes I get a little wild when I'm drunk, but I'll be fine. And she was, I'm like, all right, fine, let's do it. Day two, I'm on stage. I hadn't seen her in a few hours. And I look out on the audience and I swear on my life, naked, wrapped in toilet paper, drunk off her ass. And I went up to the man, the owner of the cruise. I was like, dude, she's out of my room. Do what you got. You got to leave her at the next port. I don't give a shit. Just kick her off the boat. And we never spoke again after that.
Yeah, my experience is when a girl says I get a little drunk sometimes.
Yeah, that taught me never see them again.
That's right always on. I'm an absolute mess, especially if they're from New Jersey, Long Island, or New England. It's just a fact. It's just a fact.
It's funny is that when people say I'm not racist, it usually means they are racist. If they say they're funny, it means they're not funny, right? Yeah, yeah. But if they tell you they get a little crazy when they're drunk, trust them.
They do.
Yeah. But it's the word a little. If someone tells you they're crazy when they're drunk, they're being pretty transparent, and that's someone who probably can get through it. But if you say I'm just a little, you're downsizing it. You're like, no, it's not that bad. I just punch people and say racial slurs naked. Oh, that's all? Okay. I mean, thanks, sweetheart.
That's basically what happened. We got to wrap up this because we don't have all the time in the world with you. But we'll start with now it is time to do the first.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We have asked every guest this since the dawn of time. Their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and we just mean the first concert you went to on your own. It doesn't have to be a rock show. It's the first concert you went to on your own. Mine was you. I can't believe yours can't be mine, but let's see. What is
it would be great if he saw you on Shiprocked with that naked girl.
This will blow your mind. The first concert I went to was the Beatles in Melbourne.
My God. That's a hard one to beat. That's awesome.
Stop that.
What? So what year is that?
64.
And by the way, in your life now, have you met some of the Beatles?
No, unfortunately. Graham did. You met Ringo, but I haven't had that pleasure. I don't know I'd say.
I did this with Ringo once in a hallway. We walked by each other, and I went like this, and he gave it back to me. So that's something. I don't know what that is. It's something.
I bumped into Julian Lennon once, and I did the same thing. I was too scared to say anything, so I went.
I was a strip club DJ for a long time, and Julian Lennon used to come in regularly to that strip club, which was kind of cool to see him there getting wasted. Just painful. Very, very long time ago. What year was that, you said, for Beatles?
64.
So you were what, I guess, at that 15. Point?
15.
That's awesome. And at that point, you already knew you were going to be a musician, or
Like I said before, I didn't plan on a career in music till I got into Superstar.
Wow.
Because I didn't know that I could sing as well as people tell me I do. So,
you found out auditioning for Superstar?
Well, I auditioned for the show and got into it. And then the music director, heard me sing. And he asked me to stay back after rehearsals one day. And I thought I was in trouble. And he said, I think you've got a pretty good range. So he just kept going up the piano keyboard. And he said, you're going to understudy Judas and Jesus right now. So learn them because you're going to do them. So I got to play Judas about 50 times. And I played Jesus once. And in those days, I had like a huge afro, you know. Uh-huh. And I did my part as Jesus and did the show. And I thought it went really well. And the producer came back and he was a hard ass. And he said, I was on first name basis with him. I said, well, what'd you think, Harry? And he said, Russell, you got a fucking great voice, but nobody wants to see Jesus with an afro. You're done.
That's great. You couldn't get some hair relaxer in you? Did they have that back then? I know. The first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug.
No, weed wasn't my first drug. My first drug was in America, and it was a Quaalude.
I was going to guess a Quaalude.
A 70s drug. Yeah. That's awesome. You can't get those anymore.
No, you can't. And my combo was Quaaludes, cocaine, and tequila all together.
Well, that's a triple threat, huh?
That's tough. That's
tough. Good time then.
Quaaludes, cocaine, and tequila, QCT, mixed together at the same time?
Yeah.
Wow. And what is that? Just a very unique feel?
Well, you know, it got you high, certainly, and just the Quaalude mellowed you out. And
that's pretty wild.
Off to the races.
Is that a custom Russell cocktail, or was that something that was bestowed upon you?
Nobody else did it, so I'll claim that for myself. Don't do that, children out there. Don't ever think.
Don't do that now.
Well, they can't. So that's the beauty of this.
Quaaludes don't exist.
Of this anti-drug message, you can't. One-third does not. It's like saying you're going to do a bump of a dinosaur. It doesn't exist. You can't do nothing. Kids,
it's the best thing ever. And guess what? You're fucking shit out of luck.
You can't do it.
That's funny.
And now what about the first time you had sex?
First time I had sex was with the woman I married. And it was disaster.
So it was so bad you said, fuck it, we're going to get married? That makes no sense.
We're going to keep trying.
I didn't, it wasn't try before you buy. Huh. I was married.
How old are you? You were young, I guess.
20.
20, not that young, but wow, that's pretty wild. So that, I know that, I think you've had, am I right, 3 marriages? Is that right?
No, 6.
Is that really true?
Yeah.
Wow, 6 marriages. That's impressive, man. That's pretty wild.
Impressive.
It's impressive.
Well, 3 is the magic number, according to Schoolhouse Rocks, and you did 3 2 times. So that's double magic. You're double magic. You're on your double magic number, baby.
Double magic is what he calls Quaaludes, cocaine, and tequila.
Well, that's what we should call it, double magic. Double magic is what that's called.
My wife will be thrilled to hear that, James.
I'm here for you. Double magic.
Double magic. All right, so Air Supply is currently on tour with the Lost in Love Experience, the Lost in Love Series tour, the album as well. The newishest song, which I think is about a year or so old, is called Be Tough, which is out now. Really cool song. Sound amazing. All the tour dates are up online, but you can follow them at Air Supply Music on Instagram. All the links are there for whatever you might need to see them out on tour. And I know early June, they're going to be in New York City. If I am here in New York, at the time, I am 100% going. The only reason why I may not be going is because I might be running a half marathon again. I just got back from running a half marathon in Barcelona yesterday. Best time ever.
You're great, buddy.
Say again?
You're one of those guys.
I'm an idiot. I know. But you know what? I lost almost 100 pounds at this point, so I got to do it. Well, you know?
Good for you.
So I have a feeling right now, if I stop drinking already, I'm not drinking until I'm 73. There's no fucking way. I got to stop now. I'm never getting out of bed.
Well, if you get to the show, bring your mom.
I would love. You know what? I actually mentioned it to her today, and she said, "If you're here, I'm going to come up for it," because she lives in Miami, but she would come up for it for sure. Is there anything else you want to plug before we go around the room and do plugs?
Not really. I mean, you've done a wonderful job, and I've really had a great time. And
thank you. So did we. I'm such an obvious guy. I think you've been able to tell I'm an idiotic fan. My neighbors hate me because I'd be singing along to your songs all week. James, your plugs.
The James Mattern, T-H-E, Mattern with an M, no P. D James Mattern on Instagram, YouTube. Check out my special, The Check Spot. Big announcement on my next project. And also, yo, man, go see Chris DiStefano. He just announced it today, September 22nd. I'm going to open for him at Radio City Music Hall.
That's awesome.
Is that amazing? I'm going to be playing Radio City with one of my best friends. It's pretty cool. So come see us. It's going to be awesome.
Right. And also, by the way, Russell, James plays guitar, but you couldn't put him in your band because you said no assholes. So right there.
What the fuck is going on, Ralph? One of these days, Ralph.
Shannon, your plugs?
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on, and they tell their own personal experiences about their worst date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
Okay, now, Russell, do not give any indication when I ask this question. We have to all chime in. on whether or not Russell believes in ghosts. And I will say, this is a hard one for me, so much so that I'm going to go last. Shannon, you go first.
It is hard, but I'm going to say yes.
James.
It is hard, and I try to block them off and not see a tell, but I think I saw a tell. I will say no.
I'm going to say 100% no, because I thought of one reason why, which I will say after he chimes in to see if I'm right. Russell Hitchcock of Air Supply, do you believe in ghosts?
Absolutely, yes. I've seen
yes.
I've seen my dead father. Say that again?
I saw my dead father.
You saw your dead father. Oh, wow. Amazing. How long ago was that?
33 years ago.
Wow. Shannon, would you like me to ask him to elaborate on that a little bit?
I would love to if he wants to tell the story.
Well, I was home alone with my daughter. She was 3, and I was feeding her. And, you know, you concentrate on getting the food into the kid's mouth and not into their forehead or anywhere else. And I thought I saw this, like, shadow above her head in the doorway. And I looked up, and my father was standing there. And I just instinctively went, "Dad?" And he just went, "Phew."
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Wow. Shannon, you make you happy?
It made me so happy. How long was that after he passed away?
He passed away in 3 or 4 months before my daughter was born.
Oh, wow. Wow. All right. That's a good one. Shannon, we left on a high note for you, huh?
Yeah, I'm excited. I think I have the highest wins for this.
Yeah, you do. The reason why I thought it was a hard no was because he said he was atheist. So I felt, but that just really means you don't believe in religion. So I guess I kind of screwed up there, but there you go. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness is called The Good Sugar Podcast. Comes out every Monday. Our first location is opening on 3rd Avenue and 69th Street. We are days away from opening. If you follow me on Instagram, you've seen I've been doing walkthroughs through the store, showing you some of the products. Come down to 3rd Avenue, 69th Street. We will definitely be open extremely soon. We add a song every week to our playlist, the sdrshow.com/playlist. How do we not add the newest one, Be Tough? We'll add that to the playlist right now. Russell, Air Supply, dude, it was a fucking honor having you on. Thank you so much for doing the SDR show.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you, Shannon. I had a great time with you guys, so. Get to New York, man. We'll take care of you.
Yeah, if I'm not doing the run like a puss, I will be there for the show. That's the way I'm going to assess it. That's the.
I want to go with Ralph. I want to go with you, and I want to make out after the songs.
You want to come with me or with my mom? Because I'm going to bring my mom too.
What a threesome that'll be, Ralph. What a fun night that'll be. I'll need the Quaaludes for that night. We got to find some.
My mom had her boobs done a few years ago. She had some big honkers. You would like that. I'm telling you right now.
Jesus, I didn't want it to go this way. All right. Well, guys, I have a meeting. It was good seeing you guys. Russell, you're the best.
See everybody next time on the SDR show.
Thank you, guys.
Hello, my name is Jordan. Who are you?
I'm interested in, you know, making the world a better place to live.
People will meet me and realize I'm a goofy person. And probably the least intimidating.
Love should be blind, and we should look deeper and really know the soul of a person. And I think that's ultimately more important when you're finding
love. No one will really understand what goes on in our relationship
besides us. Your desires and your motivations are sometimes a better judge of whether the partnership is one that will last.
Each person you meet, they all have a different perception of who you are. So thank you.
I came out when I was 12, and going through middle school was really tough for me, and I was really bullied.
The toughest thing, letting go of certain people in my life who I thought were going to be a part of my life forever.
It's just interesting to see how other people view.
I don't regret going through those experiences now, because I think it ultimately made me tougher.
So, what's the toughest thing you've ever had to do?
Be tough. Be strong, belong to the rhythm of life. Be close, be fair, because it will carry you there. Say it's between you and that's just too far away. Believe. Waiting for you. Be true, be free. You know, I am longing to be everything that is oh so hard to find. But you're here now with me. This is where.
You've been listening to the SDR Show.